Welcome to the PDPW podcast, brought to you by Professional Dairy Producers, dairy's professional development organization.
Good morning. This is Bruce Vincent. I'm a third-generation logger from Libby, Montana, and I'm honored to share some time with you this morning. I'd like to talk a bit today about what I think I've learned about remembering priorities. I'm going to share an intensely private moment between me and another fellow during which I learned a great deal about the person I was meeting. And I also learned an even more important life lesson about priorities that I carry with me every single day. I call it helicopters can wait. Several years ago, our efforts concerning the reintroduction of our rural resource-providing cultures to the ever more urbanized society of our nation was honored with an award from President and First Lady Bush. Provider Pals was the name of the program, and it was an urban-rural cultural exchange that I'll discuss in a future podcast, but it was nominated by the Forest Service for the first ever Preserve America President's Award, and we were honored to win that award. It was to recognize our cultural exchange program, and we restored an abandoned Forest Service Ranger station that had been built by the Civilian Conservation Corps, and we used it as a learning center for students from throughout the nation that were engaged in our urban-rural cultural exchange. The award was given at a White House ceremony with guests in the East Room that included the Secretary of Interior, Secretary of Agriculture, Chief of the Forest Service, and a few others, and we only had 2 days' notice that we had won, and we had to get to Washington, D.C., and we were luckily able to bring a few of our board of directors, some staff, some officials from our major sponsor, which was Ford Motor Company, and thankfully, we were also able to bring my wife and my four kids. Although the youngest, who was a freshman in high school at that time, nearly didn't get to go, since the first two times the White House called his cell phone to confirm his attendance, he hung up on him thinking a friend was juking him. Yeah, right, the White House is calling. But we got that straightened out, and he was able to attend with the rest of us. I was just a few days out of the hospital from a back surgery, which is pretty common for a logger who thinks they're Popeye when they're young. And the president had arranged for some Secret Service folks to greet me, meet me, take me from place to place, helping me upstairs and into chairs. And after the meeting with the President and First Lady in the Oval Office, the rest of the folks got to meet the East Room, the First Lady posed for pictures. But for me, when the East Room ceremony started, the biggest event of the day had already happened. Because prior to that event, the award winners, four of us, were taken into the Oval Office for an official award presentation by the President and First Lady Bush. And stepping into the Oval Office, each of us was introduced to the President and Mrs. Bush. We shook hands and participated in small talk, but I have to tell you, I was blown away by two things when I entered the office. First, the Oval Office sense of place is unreal, and the President later shared a story of Russian President Putin entering the room, prepared to tackle the President in a tough negotiation. And upon entering the Oval Office, the first words that atheist muttered to the president were, "Oh my God," I concurred. I could feel the history in my bones. Second thing I noted was the man that inhabited the office. He engaged me with a firm handshake and a look that can only be described as penetrating. It was warm, alive, he was fully engaged, he was disarmingly penetrating. I was admittedly concerned about meeting the guy. I think all of us have an inner hope most powerful man in our country is worthy of the responsibility and authority that we bestow upon them with our vote. And I admit that part of me was afraid that I'd be let down by the moment, that the person and the place would not meet the lofty expectations of my fantasy world. This says nothing about my esteem for President Bush, but just reflects my practical realization that reality might not match my dream. Once inside the office, the president got right down to business, and standing in front of his desk, he handed out the awards one at a time and posed for pictures with the winners and Mrs. Bush. And with the mission accomplished, the president and Mrs. Bush relaxed and initiated a lengthy informal conversation about a number of things. He and the first lady talked about things like the rug in his office. traditionally, the Oval Office rug is designed by the First Lady, and it's to make a statement about the president. And Mrs. Bush chose a brilliant yellow sunburst pattern to reflect hope. President Bush talked about the absolute need for hope in the Oval Office. He said he believed that with hard work and faith in God, every day is a day of hope. And he said he started each of his days in the Oval Office with such hope. He and the First Lady were asked about the impact of the presidency on their marriage, and with an arm casually wrapped around Laura, he said he thought the place might be hard on weak marriages, but it had the ability to make strong marriages even stronger, and he was blessed with a strong one. I asked him about the biggest challenge of the presidency, and he talked about the daily frustration of partisan politics. This from a politician, he said, but he said when he was elected, he promised he'd do in D.C. what he thought he had done in Texas, and that was build alliances and coalitions that bridged party lines in order to move the nation forward. And he quickly learned that there are those in the nation's capital on both sides of the aisle that would rather see the nation dismantled than work together to achieve a common good, and that, he said, was a bitter and continuing disappointment. He also talked about things like the artwork and other stuff in the office, including the desk that was given to the U.S. by Queen Victoria and used by FDR and JFK. In fact, FDR had a front panel added to the desk to cover the midsection because he didn't want the country to know that he was in a wheelchair. President Bush laughed and said, "How things have changed. FDR hit a wheelchair, and if I eat a pretzel and get a tingle in my arm, it's front page news around the globe." And that little desk, by the way, is hinged, or that little full front is hinged, and it's that door that we've all seen John sticking his head from behind in the famous photo of JFK at work. He noted there was a bunch of artwork from Texas. He said it made sense because Texas is a part of who he is. He talked about family and place and faith, helping to build the person you end up being, and noted that the office, the Oval Office, reflected who he was. He also said it'd be a mistake to come to the Oval Office and entertain a mission to find yourself. Said with all the pressures and responsibilities that go with the job, you best know who you are when you put your name on the desk. And he said he knew who he was. America had already had at that time 4 years to learn about who he is. He said if they liked it, what they saw, he'll have another 4 years. If not, he'll be going back to Texas. After about 30 or 35 minutes, it was time to go. And the president and first lady made one more pass down the line of awardees, shaking hands and offering congratulations. And when the president shook my hand, I said, "Thank you, Mr. President, and God bless you and your family." He was already in motion to the next person in line, but he stopped abruptly, turned fully back to me, gave me a piercing look, renewed the vigor of the handshake, and said, "Thank you, and God bless you and yours as well." On the way out of the office, we were about to leave by the glass doors on the west side, and I was the last person in the exit line. Shook his hand one more time, and I did something that even surprised me. I said to him, "Mr. President, I know you're a busy man and your time is precious, but I also know you to be a man of strong faith, and I have a favor to ask you." As he shook my hand, he looked me in the eye, and he said, "Just name it." And I told him that at that very moment, my stepmom was in Kalispell, Montana, in a hospital having a tumor removed from her skull. I told him it'd mean a great deal to me if he would consider adding her to his prayers that day. He grabbed me by the arm, took me back toward his desk, and he said, "So that's it. I could tell there was something weighing heavy on your heart today. I could see it in your eyes, and this explains it." And from the top drawer of his desk, he retrieved a pen and a note card with a seal on it and said, "How do you spell her name?" And I spelled Loretta for him. And he jotted a note to her while discussing the importance of family and the strength of prayer. When he handed me the card, he asked about the surgery and the prognosis, and I told him we were hoping it wasn't a recurrence of an earlier cancer, and if it was, that they get it all with the surgery. He said, "Well, if it's okay with you, I will take care of that prayer right now. Would you pray with me?" And I was surprised, but I told him yes, and he turned to the staff that remained in the office and shooed him back to the back of the office or told him to leave. He said, "Bruce and I would like some private time for a prayer." And as the folks were leaving, he turned back to me and he took my hands in his. And I was prepared to do a traditional prayer stance, standing with each other with our heads bowed. And instead, he reached for my head with his right hand, pulled gently forward, and placed my head on his shoulder. With his left arm on my mid-back, he pulled me to him in a prayerful embrace, and he started to pray softly. And like any tough, knuckle-dragging logger, I started to cry. He continued his prayer for Loretta and for God's perfect will to be done, and I kept crying. And my body shook a bit as I cried, and he just held on tighter. He closed by asking that God's blessing on Loretta and the family be with us during the coming months. I stepped away from our embrace, and I wiped my eyes, swiped at the tears that I'd left on his shoulder, and looked into the eyes of our president. And I thanked him as best I could, told him that me and my family would be praying for he and his. And as I tell this story, in fact, every time I think about it, I reflect on what it means. And I have to tell you that all I really know is that that simple act left me humbled and a bit more understanding if it means what it means to have our priorities straight. Walking into the Oval Office, I so hoped the man I thought a president should be was reflected in the man we had placed in that office. I left the office knowing that George Bush was real and he had his priorities well outlined in his actions. And I've read internet stories about presidents being the comforters in chief, praying with troops in the hospital and families after disasters. And with each uplifting account, I hope each of them is true and not an internet perpetuated myth. This one I know to be true. I was there. He was real. And his faith and sharing his faith in prayer at that moment was his priority. And it struck me that he had a pile of incredible stuff on his desk each day, and yet he was tuned in so well to the here and now that he even sensed that there was something heavy on my heart. And then, with the helicopter, he had Marine One waiting on the lawn. He took time out of his life to care, to share, and to seek God's blessing for my family in a simple man-to-man, father-to-father, son-to-son, husband-to-husband, Christian-to-Christian, prayerful embrace. And he did it while his handlers were trying to get him to the long-waiting Marine One helicopter to whisk him off to the airport. As a footnote, by the way, the president's office kept track of Loretta's healing process, which she went through with a note from President Bush laminated and hanging from her neck. And she was not a Bush supporter, by the way. And then he invited my dad and Loretta to be just behind him at the podium during the inauguration ceremony, and the entire family got to go to a presidential ball. And you'll note that this was not for the media. He never mentioned it, but it was another example of keeping his priorities in order. And I think about that moment when I'm very, very busy and something comes up that I struggle to find time for. We all face that dilemma on a daily, sometimes hourly basis. For me, I identify my faith, my family, my friends, my work, my health, my community, my culture as my priorities, and I try to keep them in order. And on any given day, there's an internal fistfight going on concerning the things that to take care of during the 24 hours we all have in a day. And while all of these things need taken care of and need time dedicated to them, I try hard every day to remember the order that I want my priorities to be in to keep my life on an even keel. This weekend was a classic example. Kids and grandkids descended on our place from all over the state. And I have a lot of things that need to be done. I have a list of to-dos for my job, a list of to-dos for the Chamber of Commerce that I'm president of, I have a list of to-dos in the yard, in the garden. Lots of things need to be done. But my experience with President Bush once again helped me steer my week in the direction of my priorities. I didn't have a helicopter waiting, but I had my kids and over a dozen of our 16 grandkids that wanted to go fishing, wanted to go jump in the creek, go jump in the lake, wanted to play basketball or croquet or cornhole or cribbage. That family list of to-dos was as long as my to-do list of work, and it was my family to-do list that won. We played cornhole, we played cribbage, we went fishing, we jumped in the creek, we swam in the lake. I enter this post-4th of July week with an even longer list of work to-dos, but I also enter with a very, very full heart. that will keep me going as I plow through them, because after all, even for a president, priorities end up marking the trail we leave in this lifetime. And this week, my family priority trumped my work priority. I pray that each of you listening this morning have a great week and a priority-fulfilling summer. And remember, the helicopters that try to muscle in on your life's real priorities can wait.
Our thanks to Bruce Vincent for today's message. Bruce, a third-generation logger from Libby, Montana, and co-owner of the community outreach firm Environomics. Learn more about Bruce at brucevincentspeaking.com. And for archive PDP podcasts, visit pdpw.org. Until next time, have a great week.